So we're now looking at Unit 7, Lesson 2, and we are looking at the main subject matter of this ninth chapter of the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So today we're going to be looking at the questions that Lord Brahma asks, and having asked those questions, the answers that he does receive from Lord Sri Krishna, and in the form of four seed verses which form the essence or the four seed verses of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. So let us just reflect on what we've studied in the second canto that has brought us to this point. So the Srimad Bhagavatam, of course, is a series of questions and answers. Going back to the end of the first canto, in chapter 19, we see that Parikshit Maharaj asks some very essential questions to Sukadeva Goswami, asking what is the supreme goal of life, and in essence, for all persons, especially those who are about to die, what they should be hearing about, chanting about, thinking about at all times. In chapter 2, Sukadeva Goswami recommended direct devotional service, bhakti yoga, as the most auspicious means. And he explained that Lord Sri Krishna is the Super Soul and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that devotional service unto him is the perfection of religion. So one should hear about him, glorify and remember him. In the third chapter, Sukadeva Goswami describes different processes which may help the neophytes ultimately come to that platform of bhakti yoga. Now in chapter 4, Parikshit Maharaj, having been satisfied with that answer, he then asked from Sukadeva Goswami about the Lord's creative activities. And of course, those series of questions are very pertinent to today's class, today's discussion in the chapter 9. He wanted to know about the Lord's creative activities by his different energies and expansions. And Sukadeva Goswami, in order to answer that question, he related a conversation between Lord Brahma and Narada Muni. Now, in that conversation, we see in chapter 5 that Narada questioned Brahma about the phenomenal world also. Therefore, of course, by relating that conversation, Sukadeva Goswami would be able to sufficiently answer Parikshit Maharaj's questions, because they're about the same subject matter, same questions. Narada also, of course, wanted to know about Lord Brahma's own position. Lord Brahma explained how the living entity becomes bewildered about the identity of the Supreme Lord, and how the material world is manifested by Mahavishnu. He explained about Garbhadakshaya Vishnu's role entering within the universe, and about Shiradakshaya Vishnu, the Super Soul within the heart of all living beings. So some of the questions were answered. And in chapter 6, he went on further to describe that all the material manifestation which is takes the form of the Virata Rupa, or the universal form, which is an expansion from the Supersoul, consists of one quarter of the Lord's energy, but there is another three quarters of the Lord's energy which manifests in the spiritual realm. But that such spirit, the Lord's spiritual potency being inconceivable, one needs to surrender unto the Supreme Lord in order for the Lord to personally reveal the mysteries of that transcendental energy, its workings. Now in chapter 7, of course, Lord Brahma explained the various incarnations of the Lord with their specific functions, along with a description of Lord Sri Krishna as being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, Lord Brahma, having spoken thus, he asked that Narada to expand upon and describe those activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the benefit of the conditioned souls in this material world, because by hearing about that, as he's, Sukadeva Goswami described in the second chapter, that that is the supreme process of transcendental, supreme method for transcendental realization and God realization. So Brahma is also asking Narada that you describe that science. Now, in chapter 8, we see that Parikit Maharaj asked Sukadeva Goswami, so again we come back to Parikit, that how did Narada explain this transcendental qualities of the Lord as requested by Lord Brahma in chapter 7. I think in your book it says in chapter 6. I think that's a mistake. Yeah. So, because it was the end of chapter 6, 7 if you have a look there. So you might see that in your student handbooks. Just a little editorial mistake in your student handbooks. Alright, so at the end of chapter 7, Brahma requested Narada to explain the transcendental qualities of the Lord. Because, you know, Parikit Maharaj also wanted to hear about the science of God. He asked many, many different questions, Parikit Maharaj, also in that chapter. The difference between the Supreme Lord and the conditioned living entities, you know, about the planetary systems, time, the duration of life, the reactions of the three modes, the transmigration of the soul, about the great souls, the yuga avatars, religious principles, devotional service, and the conditioned and unconditioned living entities. So many, many questions. So that brings us to chapter 9, which we've been studying. We began at the beginning where Sukadeva Goswami explained that it's due to ignorance that the conditioned soul becomes encaged in the temporary varieties of material forms and material bodies. But the Supreme Lord has an eternal form of knowledge and bliss, so he never undergoes that process of attaining material forms. In order to give Parikit Maharaj an example of the Lord's transcendental nature as compared to the subordinate living entity, he gives the example of Lord Brahma. Right? And therefore in chapter 9 we have that story of Lord Brahma sitting on the lotus atop of that's sprouted from Garbhadakshay Vishnu. Brahma hears the words tapa tapa. He understands that the Supreme Lord is giving him direction. In fact, you know, the acharyas described that was Krishna himself giving Brahma, you know, who vibrated that sound. It was also Krishna himself inspiring Brahma within their heart to understand that I am instructing you to perform penance and austerities in order to realize me. So, Lord Brahma underwent tapasya, and the Lord being satisfied with him, he manifests Vaikuntha. And the Lord revealed to him that it was indeed him who actually previously ordered Brahma to undergo penance. Now, Brahma asked four questions in verses 26 to 29 of this chapter, so that he's able to act instrumentally to generate the living entities without being conditioned by the activities, by such activities, nor victimized by pride. The Lord first tells Brahma that knowledge about him is confidential and must be realized by pure devotional service. So there's a preliminary instruction in verses 31 and 32. And then the Lord explains the four essential points about himself in four verses known as the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam. Well, there's four seed verses of the Bhagavatam. And he describes it by understanding this, these four seed verses, that Lord Brahma can remain free from pride as he executes the duty entrusted him in generating all the living entities within the material world. The four C verses, of course, are in 33, 34, 35, and 36. Just to quickly summarize them, in 33, the Supreme Lord alone exists before, during, and after creation. In 34, whatever appears to exist without relation to him is the illusory energy. In verse 35, the Lord exists within and outside of everything. In verse 36, one must always search for him, the personality of Godhead. And then Sukadeva Goswami relates to Parikit that after that, the Lord disappeared. Brahma proceeded with the creation. And later, Lord Brahma narrated the Bhagavatam Narada, who later instructed the same to Srila Vyasadeva. And chapter 10, of course, Sukadeva Goswami will describe the 10 divisions of the Bhagavatam, which is an expanded understanding of those four seed verses. Huh? So that is a summary of the second canto, which brings us up to today's lesson as to especially the preliminary questions that Lord Brahma asked and the reply in the form of the four seed slokas. Alright, so we're going to look at verses 26 to 29, first of all. And of course, this is one of the homework questions, Purva Svajaya questions, question 1 for chapter 9. List Lord Brahma's four questions. It was one of those questions that could always end up in an exam one day. Actually, this is very easily answered. Who's answered this question? Yeah? And where did you derive your answer from?
I don't remember. I found somewhere in this short
Is there anything in the student handbook?
Somewhere it was there. I can't remember where
it was. There is one page which gives a little summary. There it is, yeah, page 101. Okay, you see in your handbook, on page 101, the answers are given. So, they've made it very easy for you. In essence, these questions are taken from, word for word, from the purport to 2nd Canto, chapter 9, verse 31 in the purport. You'll see it at the beginning of the purport. And this, what the acharyas have done and what the handbook does for you is it also explains the questions the Brahma asks, the prelude that to the answer by Krishna, and the actual answer, all in terms of sambandha, prayojana and avideya. Okay. Now, just for those who may not be completely familiar with those terms, these, all of knowledge, especially Vedic knowledge, which is a source of actual knowledge, is divided into these three divisions of understanding. Sambandha means the relationship with the Absolute Truth. that knowledge which establishes a relationship with the Absolute Truth. That is Sambandha Gyan. Therefore, there would be a description of the Absolute Truth Himself. That would be part of that Sambandha Gyan. There would be a description of the Lord's energies. That would be a part of Sambandha Gyan. Is a description of the Lord without His energies is incomplete. There is a description of the living entities, the jivas, both in their conditioned and unconditioned stage. That would consist of Sambandha Gyan, because our relationship, and there is also an understanding of the material world, because our relationship must have knowledge of the Supreme and His different energies, including the material and spiritual energy, and the living entities themselves. That, all of that knowledge, actually in seven different topics, comprises Sambandha Gyan, or knowledge that can establish our understanding of our eternal relationship with the Absolute Truth. So that is Sambandha. Now, Avideya is the method or the process by which that relationship is practically established. And prayojana means our ultimate goal or ultimate necessity, which is non different from prema bhakti or pure love of God, which is the result of following the process by which we can attain our eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord. So, ultimately, Avideya refers to sadhana bhakti, and prayojana refers to prema bhakti. Now, everyone clear on that? Yep. So then, the questions that Brahma asks, in brief, what are the forms of the Lord both in matter and in transcendence? That's in verse 26. In verse 27, how are the different energies of the Lord working? Now, both of those are sambandha, or the knowledge given to answer those would actually help us to understand our relationship with the Supreme Lord by understanding the Supreme Lord himself and his energies, of which the living entity is one of the energies. The third question, how does the Lord play with these different energies? That's in verse 28. So you see that sambandha, prayojana and abhidaya are not in the usual order. The usual order is sambandha, abhidaya and prayojana. The order is different. But and question four, how may Brahma be instructed to discharge the duty entrusted to him? That's in verse 29. That's abhidaya. You know, what is the process? Of being properly in a relationship with the Supreme Lord. Hare Krishna. Now these questions, those questions are actually answered by Krishna in verses 33, 34, 35 and 36 respectively. Who's read Unveiling His Lotus Feet on this section? Okay. Is this a... Burujan Prabhu, obviously following the commentaries of various acharyas, in essence, he leaves out verse 28 as question 3, and he makes verse 29 as question 3, and therefore verse 30 as question 4. Just a slightly different order. But he does discuss these activities, but there's just a slight difference, and so it just may just so you're not confused if you read that there is a slight difference. So this is the one to follow very closely, and. Let's look at those, first of all. Yep.
How is the third question, how does that fit under the origin? How does the Lord play these different energies?
Yes, it's a good question. What we're going to do, we're going to tackle them one by one to see exactly how that fits in. So we'll come to that. They're very difficult to see, though. It's very difficult to perceive. Yeah. Again.
So, and in Abhidaya, there's nothing, right? In terms of those four questions.
Yeah, the fourth one.
Yeah.
The first two are Sambandha, 28 and 26 and 27.
Yeah.
28 is Prayojana, and 29 is Abhidaya. What's that? How have they done that? Let me see.
Yeah.
Yes, all they've done is Abhideya should be on top of question 4 instead of underneath. You see that, Justin? You see here that this word Abhideya should be on top as a heading. That word there should be just there on top as a heading. That's a bit confusing, right? So you got that. So questions 26 and 27 come under the topic of Sambandha. 28 is Prayojana, 29 is Abhideya. Now, in essence, verse 26 is asking about the spiritual and material forms of the Lord. In verse 27, he's asking about the material and spiritual energies of the Lord, Maya and Yogamaya. And in verse 28, he's asking how the Lord carries out his pastimes in relationship to his material or spiritual energies. Right? And in verse 29, of course, he's asking for instructions how to attain his desired goal of discharging his duty. Sorry, what's that? The answer to the questions is the Chattasloki. Verses 31, yes. That verses 33 and 34. So, question asked in verse 26 is answered in verse 33. The question asked in verse 27 is answered in verse 34. The question asked in verse 28 is answered in verse 35. And the question asked in verse 29 is answered in verse 36.
26 is answered in
33. Yes, so successively. They're in order. 26 to 29 are answered from 33 to 36. Successively. And verses 31 and 32 are preliminary understanding. Now, verse 25 and 26 can almost be joined together in one sense. Lord Brahma said, "You are situated in every living entity's heart as the Supreme Director, and therefore you are aware of all endeavours by your superior intelligence without any hindrance whatsoever." So, Brahma is stating, of course, that Krishna knows what's in everyone's heart, including Lord Brahma. And that he is able to direct the spirit soul in such a way to fulfill the desires within their heart. Hello. Yeah. Can I get you to call me back after 7? 7 o'clock. Thank you. Thank you. Ganga. Hare Krishna. So, now in verses 26 and 27, in the translations we see how, in spite of your transcendental form, you assume the mundane form, although you have no such form at all. You know, so he's asking about his material and spiritual forms. And verse 27, have you by your own self manifest different energies for annihilation, generation, acceptance and maintenance by combination and permutation. As we see in Prabhupada's purport, he describes that such energy is simultaneously one with and different from the Lord. In other words, there is nothing but the Lord, and still the Lord is different. So there's the Lord is the source of the energy, and because the energy is it derives from the Lord, it is non-different from Him. At the same time, we do distinguish to some degree between the energy and the energetic. So these two questions asking about the Lord's form and the energy that generates from that form. We know that the Lord's transcendental form is manifested by the spiritual energy in which he has various activities. And yet we understand that the material creation is nothing but the energy of the Lord as well, and that is also emanating from the Lord. He wants that explained, he wants that understood. Now, verse 28 describes how the Lord plays like a spider that covers itself by its own energy. Prabhupada gives the analogy. The exact example is the spider and the spider's web. The web is created by the spider, and it is maintained by the spider, and as soon as the spider likes, the whole thing is wound up by the spider. He also says that the spider is covered within the web. So, so we understand, of course, that the spider creating, maintaining and winding up its own creation in the form of a web is an analogy which is similar to the Lord maintaining, creating, maintaining and winding up the material creation. As Prabhupada puts in his purport, that if a simple spider can do such a thing, why can't the Supreme Lord? Now, Prabhupada's statement at the end of that the spider is covered within the web, is a summary statement of which there is a lot more to it, that this, in essence, indicates the action of the both the material energy and the yoga maya, that because the living entities in the material creation are enamored by the material creation, they don't focus their attention upon the Supreme Lord. And in a similar way, by the influence of the material creation, by the influence of the spider's web, one may not see the spider. It can cover itself. So that's an action of the material energy. We see how Kamsa in essence, although he saw Krishna, but he could not perceive Krishna in his, he could not derive any taste of the sweetness of perceiving the personality of Godhead. So, you know, from for him it was like, you know, just looking at an opponent on the battlefield. You know, there was no sweetness. So, that's an action of the material energy. whereas, we also see that the action of yoga maya also covers Krishna, Krishna's devotees. So the action of yoga maya acts upon his devotees, whereas the action of maya or maha maya acts upon the non-devotees. The action of yoga maya covers the Lord's form sometimes. We see that with Arjuna, when he was perceiving the universal form, he could no longer perceive the form of Krishna, although Krishna was standing right beside him. And in this way, Krishna was able to, you know, reveal his power and hide his form of sweetness so that Arjuna would get a full sense of the power of the Lord. In many different ways, the Lord's yoga maya. So, you know, in actuality, the spider's web example covers both the material energy, the Lord playing with his material energy for the hiding himself from the materialist, and also how he hides his own forms and qualities or power or sweetness according to the different levels of devotees that he is reciprocating with. That is also so in this way he is playing with his different energies as he likes, both maya and yoga maya. And we will come back to that to see how that relates to Prayojana. And in verse that so in essence, you know, that some of the acharyas such as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur couple verses 26 and 27 as one phrase. So in other words, in verse 26, you know, he's asking how the various different energies of the Lord work. And then in verse 27, he's asking how he utilizes or plays, enjoys different pastimes, either in the material or spiritual realms, with those energies. It's sort of two questions that can be, the one example is, you know, used for the both questions. I'm master of all energies, please tell me philosophically all about them. Alright, so then you see in Prabhupada's statement there, he literally, you know, continues the question from verse 28 also, from verse 27, sorry. So in verse 27, he's asking about the different energies of the Lord, and in verse 28, Prabhupada just continues the question, please tell me philosophically all about them, those energies. You play like the spider that covers itself by its own energy, and your determination is infallible. But later on, as we see in verse 31, Prabhupada does clarify what that question was in the purport to verse 31. He makes it very clear, just in case someone missed it, what that question was. 29, please tell me so that I may thus act instrumentally to generate living entities without being conditioned by such activities. As Prabhupada mentions in the purport, that a conditioned soul is instrumental in the hands of the external energy, Gunamayi Maya, or the illusory energy of the Lord, and in the liberated stage, the living entity is instrumental to the will of the personality of Godhead directly. Right, so Lord Brahma, he wanted to be saved from the pitfall of pride. He didn't want to come under the the influence of false ego. He didn't want to come under the influence of the material energy in dealing with the material energy. He has to deal with the material energy to generate offspring, but he doesn't want to be under the influence of that material energy that he's associating with to perform. He wants to be he wants to know from the Lord that how he can always just remain an instrument in the hands of the Lord and not of material energy at that. What he should do and what he should not do. okay. So, verse 30 in essence continues that theme that, you have shaken hands with me just as a friend does with a friend, as if in an equal position. So, Prabhupada is describing that in the purport, Brahma is in situated in the humor of friendship with the Lord. He managed to shake hands with him, or the Lord shook hands with him, let's put it that way. The Lord treated him as a friend. The Lord also gave him quite an important task, giving all the living entities different bodies. So, the Lord has treated him as a friend and given him a very important task to do on his behalf. In both accounts, he doesn't want to become proud. he wants to understand, of course, that he wants to always maintain the understanding that, as he's previously said to Narada, that, the real credit in all this work goes to the Lord. And he understands that it's possibly become proud. So, so it's interesting here that Brahma says, "You have shaken hands with me just as a friend does with a friend." In essence, Brahma is also he's not saying, I have shaken hands with you and, I have made you my friend. You have made me your friend, like that, which is therefore Brahma wants to actually qualify, for that exalted privilege. In essence, may I attain that sort of love and devotion to actually be, your friend. Remembering that this is way at the beginning of material creation, and so in essence, the Lord is invoking that mood of friendship with Lord Brahma in a relationship. That does not mean that relationship is completely mature and properly, fully established. We also see that, you know, there are described in the Nectar Devotion that there are two different categories of friendship. You know, there is the eternal friendship of you know, those who are eternally situated in the rasa of friendship with the Lord. That's an eternal relationship. And then there's friendship, as mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, that the Lord is saying that He is the friend of all living entities, and one should recognize that. So, you understand that distinction? it means that, you know, when we go back to the spiritual world, if we're eternally situated as Krishna's friend, not as in a parental relationship or as a lover or a servant, then that is the eternal rasa. Whereas in this world, while we're actually practicing in the stages to come to the platform of pure devotional service, prema bhakti, we can still develop a friendship. It's actually one of the nine processes of devotional service, is to come to a mood of friendship with the Lord. And that is to acknowledge His friendship with us. Like that. So, you know, there's a slight difference between those two different categories. So, we can look at that another time. But Alright, so then we look at texts 31 and 32, which are a prelude to the Chaturshloki. So, in the purport, now the text is, of course, the Lord said, "Knowledge about me, as described in the scriptures, is very confidential, and it has to be realized in conjunction with devotional service. The necessary paraphernalia for that process is being explained by me, and you may take it up carefully." Alright, so in other words, you know, knowledge about me or my form, very confidential. And the Lord will explain that, and He will also explain sadhana bhakti and prema bhakti. So, Lord Brahma described as the topmost devotee of the Lord within the universe. And the Lord has replied to his four principal inquiries in four important statements, which are known as the original Bhagavatam in four verses. That's stated there in the purport to verse 31. Now, in this verse, certain terms are used which will come up. Jnana vijnana sahas, rahasyam or sarahasyam, and tarangam. They're the four things that the Lord will actually explain. Jnana vijnana, rahasyam, tarangam. So the Lord's going to explain him confidential knowledge about the Lord's forms. And jnana. Of course, this is shuddha jnana, or pure knowledge, not vishaya jnana, or material knowledge. Vijnana means that knowledge is realized when one can properly distinguish between matter and spirit. And rahasyam, of course, is the most confidential topic of all the Vedic literatures, which is? What's that? Prema Bhakti. Prema Bhakti. Tarangam is devotional service in the sense of, you know, devotional service includes sadhana bhakti and prema bhakti. Tarangam, the paraphernalia required to attain the most confidential goal, refers to the sadhana bhakti, and rahasyam refers to the prema bhakti. Therefore, you see in Prabhupada's purport, he does say that rahasyam means devotional service, but he does, you know, one can understand the cannot understand the person of Godhead unless one becomes a devotee and discharges devotional service. This mystery is love of God. So, when he's talking about devotional service, he's talking about devotional service on the platform, prema bhakti there. Therein lies the main qualification for knowing the mystery of the personality of Godhead. And to attain the stage of transfer love of Godhead, regular principles of devotional service must be followed. There he discusses the sadhana bhakti. What's that?
The first line. What is that knowledge?
Yeah, the supreme knowledge, jnana, is knowledge of the Lord's forms, transcendental forms.
It says parama.
Huh?
What does this knowledge talk about? This talks about prema bhakti. This knowledge.
You see, in the prelude to the answers, in that little square box, jnanam parama guyam me. Knowledge about me, as described in the scriptures, is very confidential. Guyam. Jnanam parama guyam. Very confidential. Most confidential. Supreme is a supreme knowledge. Supreme confidential knowledge.
What is that knowledge is talking about?
That is the knowledge of the Lord's forms. Yes. Yes, how the Lord manifests his forms, his eternal spiritual forms. As described, he doesn't actually have a material form, and at the same time, the Virata Rupa is actually generated from the Lord, and therefore, in essence, we may say that it is a material form of the Lord, but it's actually it's only a reflection of the Lord's form, or a shadow of the Lord's form. So it's not actually his form, but that shadow is also coming from the Lord. But this that is the sambandha, the prayojana. It has to be realized in conjunction with devotional service. Now, the Arahasyam or Sarahasyam. Full realization, of course, is Prema Bhakti, and but even the Sadhana Bhakti gives confidential realization. Even understanding the process of Sadhana Bhakti is confidential knowledge, because that will actually that secret process, confidential process, is the only process that can actually reveal the full realization of the Lord's transcendental forms. But the full realization will come with progression of bhakti yoga, devotional service, up to the point of prema bhakti. Abhideya tarangamcha grahanna garitam maya. The necessary paraphernalia for that process is being explained for me. The process of coming to that point of confidential full realization. Now, this, we see here that in verse 34, I think it's summarized in your, you know, the summary of chapter 9. You see, for verse 34, they give this statement that whatever appears to exist without relationship to him is his illusory energy. Alright, and see that? So, Vijnana, that is the topic of Vijnana. Whatever appears to exist without relation to him is his illusory energy. And that's the answer to, you know, text 27. How are the different energies of the Lord working? So this understanding of the Lord's transcendental forms can be realized when one can distinguish properly between the material and spiritual energies. That's the sum and substance of that. As Burujan Prabhu summarizes in his unveiling his lotus feet, that realization of this subtle science occurs by the Lord's grace. So realization of the Lord's forms occurs by the Lord's grace. This is because the Lord's form, qualities, and activities are spiritual and beyond the realm, beyond Maya's realm. In addition, because he is the absolute truth, anything that appears as if it is separate from him is only an illusion or Maya. So, one, To understand the Lord's forms, we have to understanding something that's beyond Maya. And if we understand something within Maya that appears to be separate from the Lord, it means that we're not coming to the understanding, we're remaining in illusion. So Maya is playing, we'd say, a role of covering realization. That Maya is controlled by the Lord, and therefore we're dependent upon the Lord's mercy. So an understanding of how the Lord deals with his Maya in relationship to the living entities leads to the progression of realization. You know, it's like, you know, if you go to the door and you knock on the door and they won't let you in, and they say, "Well, what's the password?" And they open sesame. So, you know, an understanding of how that person is dealing with that door as to whether you go through it or not. It's like that. Related to our realization of the Lord's transcendental forms. And of course, not only does one have to be released from the material energy, but one also has to be blessed by the spiritual energy. So, understanding the Lord's spiritual and material energies are concomitant with one removing all obstacles and being successful on gaining realization of vijnana of the Lord's transcendental forms. So therefore, this although it appears to be a discussion of Maya or the material energy, it is a discussion of vijnana. And vijnana is actually a discussion of both the spiritual and material energies. and therefore, we see in verse 27 that how the different energies of the Lord working. And, it does refer to both his material and spiritual energies. And that is answered in question 34, which is dealing with this topic of vijnana. Rahasyam. As we said, devotional service, but specifically love of God. Devotional service on the platform of love of Godhead. Tarangam. Is a necessary paraphernalia or means by which one can attain that confidential goal. And that means, of course, is sadhana bhakti. Tarangam? Yeah, tarangam is a necessary paraphernalia or means by which one may attain the confidential goal of prema bhakti. And that means and paravanala is sadhana bhakti. Engaging our senses and the objects of the senses in the service of the Lord. So there's paravanala and a means. You see, so that is, the Krishna is saying to Brahma that, yes, I'm going to explain to you jnana vijnana, rahasyam, and Tadangam. And in this way, you will understand your relationship, the great mystery of Prema Bhakti, which one has to attain in order to realize my transcendental forms, and Abhidaya, the process by which one can attain that form. So this is all very confidentially done. Krishna is purposely explaining this very confidential matter in such a way that it cannot be understood by non-devotees. He's purposely doing that. Why would he do that? Why do you hide something?
It's precious.
It's precious, yeah. So it's like a valuable gem in a box. This whole material world is like there is a valuable gem, which means that Krishna is present in the material world, and our own spiritual self. So within this material world, although we describe it as a material world, some part of it is actually eternal, because the Lord is present, we are present as the spirit soul, and the Lord's spiritual energy also comes into play. So some parts of the material world do contain the priceless gem of spiritual existence. But that is covered in the box of the material energy, and it is hidden from those who are not deserving of such a treasure. No. On the contrary, we see that actually, if you look at the activities of the Lord, he goes to he makes as much endeavor as even he, the Supreme Lord, could possibly make to entice and help the conditioned souls back. From his part, if you look at all the things that the Lord has done and list them, he goes to as much endeavor as possible. But then if you look at the living entity's reciprocation as to how much they want to take advantage of that, you see that it's very little. So because they don't want to take advantage of it, he, as Brahma said in verse 25, he knows what's in their heart and he fulfills that desire. That's what's stated in verse 25. If one wants to remain in the material world, then the Lord knows that, and he will fulfill that, and he cannot be obstructed in that. Or if one takes a position of Brahma, that no, I want to understand the confidential truth of the Vedas, by which full, you know, spiritual realization can be attained, even, you know, within this material world, then the Lord knows that desire, and he cannot be obstructed in fulfilling that desire. That is stated in verse 25. Now, in verse 32, so the Lord says, all of me, my actual eternal form, and my transcendental existence, color, qualities and activities, let all be awakened within you by factual realization out of my causeless mercy. So in other words, the Lord's giving his, you know, blessings that Vishwanath Chakravarti Dekor describes that by the gradual increase of sadhana and prema bhakti, which are special functions of the Lord's supreme kripa shakti or mercy shakti, when Brahma realizes greater degrees of sweetness in the Lord's form and qualities, he will realize directly the braja form of Krishna, sweeter and rarer than the present form of realization. So we know that as described in previous verses, Lord Brahma first saw the Narayan form of Krishna according to his level of sadhana bhakti. Krishna manifested that form later, Krishna being more pleased by his level of devotion, actually revealed to him his own form of Krishna. It's described by the Acharyas, it is actually Krishna who spoke these four seed verses. There are different scenarios that I've heard. In other words, these four seed verses may have also been spoken by Narayan, then by Krishna. But of course, having Krishna present speaking gives one more realization of the same verses, even if they're spoken by Lord Narayan, because, you know, he would realize more and more the confidential sweetness of the Lord's form. Some acharyas actually say that Krishna spoke, then after speaking the four seed verses, actually spoke the full 18,000 verses. Some acharyas say that, and there are different scenarios. But we do see that, you know, the general picture we can understand is that Lord Brahma perceived the form of Narayan. He also later perceived the form of Krishna. Upon seeing the form of Krishna, Krishna also spoke to him the Srimad Bhagavatam, at least in the four seed verses. Therefore we see that Lord Brahma's progressive realization according to his bhakti, is progressive from the beginning of creation. Then, you know, still at the very beginning of creation, but, you know, Lord Brahma is actually progressing in different levels of bhakti yoga towards, you know, the stage of prema bhakti, in such a way that the Lord is revealing more and more confidential aspects of his transcendental form. And we understand that Krishna also revealed such knowledge to Lord Brahma that he then spoke the Brahma Samhita, where he describes, you know, that Krishna showed his transcendental form and associates and the spiritual variegatedness of Vrindavan Dham, you know, Braja. In this way, but even having seen Krishna and Krishna's forms, still Brahma's devotional mood is growing in the course of his lifetime. So he's about halfway through his last lifetime, And of course, we know that seeing the form of Krishna, he got more realization of the transcendental nature of Krishna's form when he stole away Krishna's cowherd boys and calves. So Brahma's level of understanding of, and we also understand, of course, he later appeared as Haridas. So there are different levels of Brahma's realization, which are progressive throughout his lifetime, and according to his progression in Prema Bhakti, Krishna is revealing more and more the different aspects by his mercy, by Krishna's mercy. One's advancement in sadhana bhakti and up to prema bhakti, that is a direct manifestation of Krishna's mercy. And by that, so as one progresses in devotional service to certain levels of devotion, that means that by Krishna's mercy, one that is a proportionate degree of Krishna's mercy. And by that proportionate degree of Krishna's mercy, Krishna is revealed in his form, color, qualities, like that. So he's giving a blessing. He's saying that I'm going to reveal these things to you, and I'm giving my blessing that I favor you with the ability. I will direct you, and guide you, and protect you, so that you can actually perform sadhana bhakti. Coming to prema bhakti, by which you can actually realize these things. I think there's a quote there in the Adilila, one of the quotes in the book of quotes, Adilila chapter 1, text 52, where Srila Prabhupada does mention it, that these mysteries are gradually disclosed, it's down the bottom of that quote, to the various grades of devotees in proportion to their gradual development of their service attitude. that's in relationship to that verse. There are several quotes there. because they relate to... Krishna is going to speak the Chatur Sloki, but according to one's level of devotion, one will realize... one will actually understand the Chatur Sloki. So today, of course, we'll all hear Chatur Sloki. And... we depend very heavily upon Krishna's blessings, to understand to one degree or another. There's a quote there from the third canto, where Krishna spoke also to Uddhava. Prabhupada says that upon learning such self-knowledge of love, Uddhava felt very much aggrieved by feelings of separation from the Lord. And then he says, unless one is awakened to the stage of Uddhava, everlastingly feeling the separation of the Lord in transcendental love, as exhibited by Lord Chaitanya also, one cannot understand the real import of the four essential verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, that certainly excludes all the materialist and impersonalist. a further quote in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majjalila chapter 25, that, you know, describing that, you know, whatever meaning is in the sound of Om, Omkara, is further understood in the Gayatri. And again, this meaning is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the four slokas known as the Chaturshloki. In this way, we actually finally come to the chapter sloki verses. So in essence, Krishna's described, yes, I'm going to answer your questions. But the answer is very, very confidential. But I'll give you the blessing that you'll come to realize this more and more, because I bless you with to be able to, you know, progress in the different levels of bhakti, to and which is a requirement for actually understanding for what I'm about to say. Like this. Now there is. The second question in chapter 9, for your homework questions, Purva Svadvaya, was to summarize the chatter sloka of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. Well, they've made that very easy as well, because also on page 101, you'll see there's a chatter sloka Bhagavatam summary. From the Adi Leela, chapter 1, verse 56. So that's an example of how Krishna is helping us. All we have to do is turn the page and read it. And I wonder how many students didn't read it. and then we will say, Krishna is not helping me. Let's have a look at that quote. Very nice quote. Now it does describe, the verses 33 and 34 describe Sambandha. Alright? Now 33, the transcendental nature of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is described. The second verse, 34, further explains that the Lord is detached from the workings of the material energy Maya. The living entities, although parts and parcels of the Lord Krishna, are prone to be controlled by the external energy. Therefore, although they are spiritual, in the material world they are encased in bodies of the material energy. The eternal relationship of the living entities with the Supreme Lord is explained in that verse. So, the Lord is detached from the workings of the material energy. The living entities, they're part and parcel of Krishna. So by nature, they're also detached from the material energy. That explains their relationship with Krishna. But they're prone to be controlled by Krishna's external energy. That also explains the relationship with Krishna, should they be rebellious. Therefore, although they are spiritual in the material world, they are encased in bodies. So, you know, here in the conditional liberated state, the relationship with the living entities has been explained. That's Sambandha. Prayojana, in verse 35, instructs that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by His inconceivable energies, is simultaneously one with and different from the living entities and the material energy. This knowledge is called Achinchabheda-bheda-tattva. When an individual living entity surrenders to the Supreme Lord Krishna, he can then develop natural transcendental love for him. This surrendering process should be the primary concern of a human being. That's why that text relates to Prayojana. Now, going back to, you know, Brahma's question in verse 28, which is under the heading of Prayojana, how does the Lord play with these different energies? So the Lord is one with and different from the living entities and the material energy. Those energies are as powerful as the Lord. They're non-different from Him. Therefore, the living entity is always controlled by one of the Lord's energies. He has to surrender to one or the other. But surrendering unto Him directly, rather than His material energy, should be His primary concern. So that surrender is development of love. That is Prayojana. So we'll look at that a little bit more, how it relates to Prayojana. And verse 36, in the next verse, it is said that a conditioned soul must ultimately approach a bona fide spiritual master and try to understand perfectly the material and spiritual worlds and his own existential position. Abhidaya, that is the process. Of course, when one does that, one approaches a bona fide spiritual master, one approaches someone who has knowledge and understands the nature of the material and spiritual world, which are under non-different from the Lord, under His control, naturally that will lead one to, after making that approach, one will naturally come to the point of surrender, prayojana. All right, so we can call that Bhaktivinoda Thakura. He puts it under the headings of Bhagavat Gyan. What is it? Is it in here? Verses there. He calls Bhagavat Gyan a knowledge of the absolute truth. Maya Vijnana, scientific knowledge of the external energy of the Lord, Sadhana Bhakti and Prema Bhakti, the four topics discussed there. Let's look at verse 33. Let's look at the first verse, and we're considering that verse 26 is asking, what are the forms of the Lord, both in matter and in transcendence? And that is answered in verse 33, which is Sambandha Gyan. This Gyan helps us to realize our eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord. Many of these points are in fact very useful for preaching against materialists and impersonalists, and therefore that in essence from here on in, this is somewhat of a preaching exercise, in, you know, understanding these different points for preaching. Aham eva asam eva agre. That only I certainly existed, only I existed before the creation. Brahma, it is I, the personality of Godhead, who is existing before the creation. Right, so, and the purport Prabhupada is describing, of course, that he's letting Brahma know that he's putting emphasis on himself. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes it as Krishna says that, he taps his chest, it's I who existed before this. Which is, you know, natural when people are speaking. Now, we know that the impersonalists do not accept the personal feature of the Lord, and Lord of the materialists. Jagatrini Mataji gave the class the other day there, making a very nice point by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that impersonalism is like something that you add it to something, expands that sort of materialistic philosophy. So impersonalism is the backbone of materialism in one sense. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a quote there, one of Prabhupada's quotes in Madhulila chapter 25, that three times Krishna stresses, he says, aham, three times. Stressing, you know, importantly, I, Krishna. So stressing the person, you know, Krishna. There are many Vedic statements which Srila Prabhupada does quote to point out that in the beginning, before creation, there was no Brahma, there was no Shiva, there was no material elements. At that. Nanyad. Yat sat asat padam, there was nothing but myself, nor was there the material nature. Now, very important here that Prabhupada gives another quote that from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 1, text 10. He describes, when we speak of Krishna, it does not mean Krishna alone. Right? Just as when we speak of the king, oh, the king is coming. You know, so we know. Just like, you know, Mr. The President of America, Obama. Don't want to get him mixed up with Osama. One has a beard, one doesn't. But, he went on a world tour. But, you know, he didn't just go by himself. He took all his paraphernalia and the big vehicles, you know, everything. Big vehicles, of course, not a chariot, but like a, basically an armor-plated, you know, limo. That you know, armor-plated, so you can't even shoot a bazooka through it. But he took so much paraphernalia. You can imagine how much paraphernalia he took with him. So when we say, "Oh, you know, Obama is coming," you know, then you imagine, "Oh, he's bringing so many like that." So you're not just making up one bed, you know. Putting the past in the oven. The king, the king's secretaries, his ministers, the king's queen. He took his queen, Obama took his queen. The king's palace, so many things. Now, Jiva Goswami actually makes an interesting point in his Samdarbhas that he does take all his servants and con- but there's no outsiders. No visitors, in essence. So that's actually explained also a little bit by Vishwanath Chakravarti the core, that you know, therefore, you know, in essence, you know, Krishna existed before creation, but persons like Brahma and Shiva and what have you did not exist, you know, nor all the, any of the conditioned souls and the material elements. So Krishna certainly existed before creation with all associates and paraphernalia in his own kingdom, but nothing from the material realm. That's the point. Because you know, some impersonalists will try to explain that Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva is non-different from Krishna. That, you know, if Krishna existed before creation, well, they're non-different from Krishna. They're also there, but they're not. Because anything which has any material quality of association was not existing before material creation. It's not possible. There's no material creation. How can something with a material quality exist? Something with material quality can only exist after material creation. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura also gives an interesting says that you know, also when you say only I existed, so for instance, if you said that you know, before marriage, you know, only I lived in such and such a suburb. That doesn't mean that because it was just yourself that you didn't do any activities, although it's not stated. So, you know, so one, you know, shouldn't take this verse in the wrong way, that, you know, only I existed means that, oh, Krishna is just somehow floating, you know, in a vacuum just by himself, and therefore, you know, there's no one else there, there's no other paraphernalia, there's no one else to interact with. One should not sort of think when Krishna is saying, yes, only I existed, that means, yes, I existed with all my paraphernalia and associates like that. That's the point being made. Is people do have that conception of God, don't they? That, you know, God, when they, many people have that idea that God is somehow, you know, alone, you know, in the spiritual realm, especially before, you know, creation. getting a little bit bored, he decided to manifest the material world so he could play with the lives of us mere mortals. Okay. Yep. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I never knew.
Mm.
They do have sort of a concept of somebody around.
Something.
It's not very well explained.
Yeah. That it's. But again, you know, That's how they take that. That, you know, when they say that on my right hand is Jesus, on my left hand is the Holy Ghost, they take it that that's it. Because that's all that's stated. That's it. There's nothing else. There's no one else. You know, we would take it that, yes, okay, he may have Jesus on one side and the Holy Ghost, but there are also so many other personalities. You know, it's just that because, you know, we're particularly interested in Jesus. Where was Jesus when you were existing? Oh, he was on my right side. We're not interested in anyone else in the spiritual world, so we don't ask. So he didn't tell us. But that's the way they take it, that, oh, yes, I'm sitting there, there's Jesus and that. And because he didn't mention anyone else, they say, well, there's no one else there. There's just Jesus. Jesus is the only way. Like that. So it's the same point. He obviously didn't have many clothes either, because he always seems to be just wearing the same sheet. You know, I don't think he had much a fashion advisor either. Or at least a consort to say, you know, you're giving blessings dressed like that. That old sheet, you wore that yesterday. And of course, Prabhupada also in a morning walk conversation describes that everything begins from God. Describing from the Bhagavad Gita that, you know, he's the cause of everything. So, you know, that indicates also that he's the cause of material existence. In the purport, he describes that the form of the Lord as seen by Brahma existed before the creation of Brahma, and the material manifestation with all the ingredients and agents of material creation are also energetic expansions of the Lord. So, in essence, when the Lord says that before material creation, I alone existed, so what would we be say is the cause of material creation? There can only be one cause, because only one thing existed before it. That's also, you know, the statement. There can be no other cause. So therefore, in essence, in answer to, you know, what are your material forms, you know, you can say that this material manifestation is the, you know, a material form manifested by, you know, by the Lord's energy. Although we see that the material forms of the Lord are not actually his personal forms, but are like a shadow or a reflection, you know, an image of his actual forms. But those material forms do exist as the Virata Rupa, and those Krishna is also the cause of the material forms, his impersonal aspect through the material energy. Of course, you know, the you know, if we consider the material world to be the virata rupa, or in essence, a material form manifested by the Lord, so who is not different from that form, because it is His energy, although He is different from the energy at the same time. That material form, we understood from the second canto, the first couple of chapters of the second canto, can be understood to some degree, even by very materialists try to understand it. Those aspiring for transcendental realization can meditate upon it. So even the neophyte, you know, yogis and what have you, can meditate upon it. You know, the spiritual forms of the Lord, of course, that confidential realization needs to be understood by, that cannot be understood. And that's the confidential thing that Brahma needs to understand through the process of bhakti yoga coming to premier bhakti. You know, other parts of that translation, paschadaham yadi tachcha, that which you see now is also I, the personality of Godhead. Yo visishita so smyaham, and after annihilation what remains will also be I, the personality of Godhead. So, you know, he is pointing out that before creation, and you're looking at me during creation, and I'll tell you now that after creation I will still exist. So, you know, in all phases of creation, I exist. So he's explaining that to Brahma. and of course, because Krishna, therefore, is the root of creation, maintenance and destruction, one should search out the root of something as the most important part of something. That's what problem. One should be attached to the root of everything rather than bewildered by the branches and leaves. That is instruction given in this verse.
Okay. Can I
ask,
knowing these?
Yes. That's a good question. Parikit Maharaj asked the same question. That, where did he ask it? Why are there so many people who worship, you know, Lord Shiva and Durga, and why are there so many temples and so few of Krishna? Yeah, all sorts of temples. Yeah. Because they want some material benediction, generally. Because
pay attention to the secondary instead of the primary.
Because the Vedas, actually, the scriptures are divided for the different mentalities of people. Some are in the lower modes of nature, some are in the modes of passion, some are in knowledge, or, you know, jnana, mode of goodness. And according to their level, the scriptures will make statements that is the most that those persons can understand. So, for instance, some scriptures will state that Brahman is the source of material creation. Impersonal Brahman. Not mention anything about the personality of Godhead. Now this, as we know, this impersonalism, you know, is very conducive to materialistic activity, because people are more, when they have an impersonal understanding of the spiritual realm, they prefer to stay in the material world where there's variety and personality. Even though that place is free of misery, it's impersonal, and they tend to, there's no sex life there, as we discussed once before. Sex life is the center of everything. So, they will say that, you know, impersonal Brahman is the cause of material creation. The followers of Shiva, will, you know, especially will study scriptures that may state that. So that is not incorrect, because actually the material energy is resting upon Brahman. But what's not stated, because they cannot understand further, is that that Brahman is resting upon the personal form of the Lord. So it's not an incorrect statement, it's just that there's more to it. That, okay, so what is the source of Brahman? Ah, that is the personal form of the Lord. That much is not stated, but that much cannot be understood, nor do they want to understand that. You know, for instance, we see, I mean, for those who may have discussed with impersonalists or materialists, you know, you've probably done, you can tell them that, oh, in the spiritual world there's form and personality and what have you, it's not impersonal or void, and they don't want to accept. If you tell them that there's nothing else beyond matter, they'll just, oh yes, yes, that's what I like to hear. Or you tell them that it's impersonal, yes, or voidistic, you know, they'll follow it. If we tell them, you know, in the spiritual world there's a personal God, his name is Krishna, and you can have all sorts of loving relationships, and they're not interested. They refuse to accept that philosophy, absolutely refuse. For many different reasons, because one, then they've got someone, you know, that they can put a name on that they're definitely competing with. You know, people like to actually think that, you know, the whole material world caters to the false ego that I am the Lord of all I survey. People don't want to know that there's a God who's actually in control of everything. They want to think, no, I'm completely independent and fully in control of all my actions and my own destiny. And if there was a God, I wouldn't follow him anyway. That's their mentality. I wouldn't surrender. When people become frustrated in the material world, then, again, they still don't want to surrender to the Supreme Person. They'll say, oh, I will become God. I'll enjoy that way. I can't enjoy on the material platform, so I'll enjoy on the spiritual platform. I will become one with God, or I will become the God. So, you know, it's a philosophy which is very distasteful to the materialist or the impersonalist. And even if you explain it to them logically, you know, you can you can sit there and explain things in the most logical and reasonable ways, in such a way that a five-year-old child will just, oh yeah, that sounds reasonable to me. And these great scholars, oh no, I can't understand, I can't accept that. And they will make ridiculous statements. You know, they're being kicked around the material world like a football, and they claim at the same time, I am God. It's a ludicrous, you know, position. Madhvacharya describes it, they're a treasure house of miseries. Yeah. And they're claiming to be God. It's a ridiculous statement. So, that's why there are so many temples of others, Shiva, Durga, Ganesh. And of course these days people don't follow any scripture, you know. These days, you know, their mother goes to the Ganesh temple on Tuesday, so we'll go there. you know, their grandfather, who seems to know something, he goes to the Shiva temple on the Wednesday, or we'll go there on the Wednesday. You know, And on Saturday I'll go, you know, where I want, so I'll go to the football. They people don't actually follow any scripture or anything. So in this way, it's very confidential. It's what they call an open secret. An open secret means these books, we're practically giving them away. It's open for everyone. But it's a secret because, because of their, like the owl, they refuse to look at it, therefore it always remains hidden.
Once Guru Jan Prabhupada
was in Fiji. So who? Guru Jan was in Fiji with Prabhupada?
And then Prabhupada was getting ready the day morning to go to a Shiva temple. And Guru Jan Prabhu noticed this. He was a bit scared and concerned all that. Then he slowly approached Srila Prabhupada and asked him, Prabhupada, are you going to the Shiva temple? He said, yes. You want me not to pray to Shiva? He said, yes. Then Guruji Prabhu was a bit taken back. And he said, no, Srila Prabhupada, they are praying Shiva as a supreme personality of God. That's why I want to tell you. Oh, is that? Then I'm not going.
That's
it. Your worship as a devotee of the Lord.
You can worship as a devotee. Yeah, that's right. Because he doesn't want to give authority to what they're doing. I like the story where one time someone came into, in the early days where Prabhupada was one of the storefronts, and they gave a bunch of pamphlets to be handed out to the devotees and anyone who would come to the Hare Krishna temple storefront that, advertised in this impersonal philosophy. So, Srila Prabhupada took those pamphlets and everyone was a little bit surprised, that he could do that. I think it was the next day that, they were having the kirtan and, then he would time as he would usually distribute prasadam, and then he asked for the pamphlets, and they gave him the pamphlets, and he put the prasadam on the pamphlets and used them as a plate for all the devotees. All right, let's look at text 34. Okay. Text 34, whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relation to me, it has no reality. No, it is my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. So we've looked at the answer to question 26, which is what are the forms of the Lord both in matter and transcendence? Sambandhigyan. Now we're looking at text 27, the answer to that. How are the different energies of the Lord working, as described in verse 34, whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relationship to me, it has no reality. Know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. Okay. This is paraphrased very nicely in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in four verses in Madhyalila chapter 25. Look. Actual spiritual knowledge and its practical application are considered in these sound vibrations that we're discussing. Although the external energy comes from me, Krishna is saying, I am different from it. Sometimes the reflection of the sun is experienced in place of the sun, but its illumination is never possible independent of the sun. When one is transcendentally situated, he can perceive me. This perception is the basis of one's relationship with the Supreme Lord. Now let me further explain this subject matter. What appears to be truth without me is certainly my illusory energy, for nothing can exist without me. It is like a reflection of real light in the shadows, for in the light there are neither shadows nor reflections. Okay. Alright, we're discussing here Krishna's, how his potency of Maya works, how his energies work, and in, firstly, Maya, material energy, Mahamaya, Gunamaya. Okay, it is something like, for instance, if we turn out the lights, if we put a pot or a jug on the table, as long as the light is in the room, it can be perceived. And if we turn the lights out, it can't be perceived. Now. The material energy has aspects of knowledge and the mode of goodness, and ignorance, which is from the mode of tama. Coming to the point of mode of goodness, one can get a glimpse of, one can begin to understand one's own spiritual nature through knowledge and mode of goodness, material goodness. But still, one cannot perceive the influence of or the spiritual forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead just by that knowledge and the mode of goodness. By tama, it's darkness, or it covers knowledge. In which case one will identify oneself as a material body. So you have knowledge in the mode of goodness, where one begins not to identify that oneself as a material body, but as a spirit soul. And ignorance, by which one forgets one's, covers the, one's spiritual existence is covered over in darkness, and one identifies. So material energy has that effect. That, for instance, we go back to the example of the jug, we turn out the light, but we may, according to reflections of light or, shadows in the darkness, we may perceive something which is not there. That's called illusion. When you take something as existing or reality that's actually not existing or real, that's illusion. So then in that slight darkness we may think that there's a spider crawling, the spider's crawling around the, I thought there was a snake crawling around the floor or something like that. So one may perceive things which are not present. That's an example of the illusory aspect of how the material energy can produce, in the same way that if we identify ourselves as the material body, that is also an illusion. But coming to knowledge, we can understand that the material elements which form the body are there, and they are real, and they cover the spirit soul, which is also there and real. So the by material knowledge we can perceive that what is existing and the material elements which form the body, and the material body which has covered the soul and the spirit soul. We can perceive that that is the aspect of material knowledge. The illusion is, a lack of that even material knowledge, is when we accept something as real which is not existing. So in other words, we accept our eternal identity as being the material body, or we accept that we see ourselves as being an independent entity with no relationship to the Supreme Lord. That is an illusion. So in this way, the material energy is acting in this way, giving some knowledge, but the actual forms of the Lord are only revealed not through the aspect of Maya. We see that in the Bhagavad Gita, it describes that when one comes to the Brahma Bhuta platform no longer identifying oneself as a material body, but identifying oneself as a spirit soul, that Brahma Bhuta platform is the beginning of the stage where bhakti can begin by the grace of the Lord. And by that bhakti, as described in the next verse from that, one can perceive the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that vidya must be that material knowledge then becoming tinged with bhakti. That mode of goodness can bring us to the point of Brahma Bhuta if there's a tinge of bhakti, and when the bhakti increases, one also begins to perceive the reality of the Supreme Lord's forms according to the increase of bhakti, Atta-prema bhakti. When that bhakti becomes pure without any material knowledge, in other words, the material knowledge diminishes altogether, then one becomes fully self-realized in the nature of the Supreme Lord's forms. Any questions? So let's look at some of the quotes here. What appears to be, this is from the, it's paraphrased in the Adi Leela, chapter 1, verse 54. What appears to be truth without me is certainly my illusory energy, for nothing can exist without me. That's the illusion. Something appears to be truth or actually existing, and yet it is existing without any relationship to Krishna or the Absolute Truth. Ignorance is a product of the illusory energy. That consciousness is a product of the illusory energy. Nothing can exist without Krishna. But in the purport, Prabhupada describes, whenever things are accepted as real without being related to the Lord, that conception is a product of the illusory energy. Yata abaso yata tamaha, just as reflection, that reflection which appears to be in the darkness. Now we're discussing these, reflections and what have you. That, again, as described in the purport to that Adi Leela verse, the Absolute Truth can be compared to the sun, which is appreciated in terms of two relative truths, reflection and darkness. Darkness is the absence of sunshine. And a reflection is a projection of sunlight into darkness. Right, so there's two relative truths that They're only relative to the sun. They have no existence independently. One could never think, oh, you know, that there is a reflection of light, but it has nothing to do with the sun. The reflection of light means that energy, that heat energy, even electricity, that heat is being generated by the sun, that heat and light. Neither darkness nor reflection has an independent existence. The spiritual world is compared to the real sunshine. The material world is compared to the dark regions where the sun is not visible. And therefore, we see that the material energy is in fact a relative truth of spiritual reality. It's not an independent existence. To think that the material world exists independently of the spiritual reality is false. Therefore, people should be inclined. You know, that's. Does everyone understand that? For instance, you know, if I'm walking, I remember when I one of my daughters when she was two. I think it was, no, maybe one and a half or something, took her to the beach. First time she ever noticed she had a shadow. And she was running back from the water, and as she's running back, she's looking like this. And she kept stopping and looking, and she'd run, and she said, oh, it's chasing. And she got a bit scared, and she saw us up ahead. She thought, no, I'll get to them before it gets to me. So, you know, she gradually worked it out, though, although she was one and a half, that this shadow actually, you know, was imitating her body. It was relative to her. At first she thought, there's something chasing me which has nothing to do with me, like this. So, you know, it is, you know, we don't see shadows running around, not relative to something that has created the shadow. Like that. So, you know, and the shadow is not the important thing. You know, even a little child will understand, okay, that shadow is relative to me, but the important thing is not the shadow, it's me. Right? So, in the same way, you know, one should understand that the reality is the spiritual manifestation, and the forgetfulness of that spiritual reality is material existence. So therefore, material existence is, you know, relative to spiritual existence. Therefore, you know, everyone should strive to understand, well, what is the reality? But people don't. You know, you tell them that they should be interested in their spiritual life. They think, oh, you know, what has that got to do with me? Well, like I'm too busy, you know, with the shadow of material existence. At that. You know, or the shadow of myself, you know. People say, I'm a mere shadow of the person I used to be. They don't know how true that is. You know. But they think that only happens when they're old. But actually, you know, from the very beginning of their life, they're a mere shadow of what their actual self. So, when the material manifestation appears very wonderful, this is due to a perverted reflection of the Supreme Sunshine, the Absolute Truth. Now, in Prabhupada's purport, he describes further, the illusory conception is called the reflection of the reality in the darkness of ignorance. So, you know, within darkness, you know, there may be some reflection of light, you know, that would indicate that reflection of light indicates that there is the actual source of that light at some place. That the reflection is not independent in itself. There must be a source of that reflection of light in that darkness. What is that source? Everything we see that's wonderful about the material existence is like that. There's a reflection of reality in this darkness. So then what is the source of that reflection? So of course, as Vaishnavas, that's why we chant the Gayatri Mantra. We meditate upon the sun, which in effect is a reflection of the Brahma Jyoti. The Brahma Jyoti is the effulgence of the Supreme Lord. And ultimately, the energy of the Lord is fully manifest in its personified Supreme Form, Srimati Radharani. So Radharani is the full manifestation of the internal potency of the Lord, and her expansion exists as Mahamaya, or the material energy. So it's described in the purport that the Supreme Lord, His energy acts as prakriti, or the material energy, which is like a dazzling reflection. By the action of this prakriti, even dead matter is caused to move by the cooperative energy of the living energy of the Lord. And the material world appears like a dramatic performance to the ignorant eyes. The ignorant person, therefore, may even be a scientist or a psychologist in the drama of prakriti. The material energy, which is basically darkness and inert and unconscious matter is actually being animated by the spiritual energy. But people only perceive either the darkness, just seeing the material energy altogether. Prabhupada further describes down here that the living entity in essence is also an aspect of the light. For instance, we give the example that you have the sun, and then the effulgence of the sun is the sunshine, which so the living entity compared to little particles of sunshine. So in actual fact, they reflect the energy or the light of the sun to some degree. So a small spirit soul. Is able to, in fact, reflect some small quantity of the unlimited spiritual energy. Know it is my illusory energy. So the same person knows the prakriti is the illusory energy of the Lord, but persons with a poor fund of knowledge become illusioned, including scientists, etc. They become dazzled by the glaring reflection of the sun, moon, electricity, etc., and deny the existence of the Supreme Lord, putting forward theories of different speculations about the creation and maintenance and annihilation of everything. Prabhupada calls it, these scientific studies of the cosmic manifestation or the bodily construction, independent of the Supreme Lord, are different reflective intellectual gymnastics only. But in the end, they are illusion and nothing more. No one can come out of material existence simply by the reflected light of the common man. One has to receive the light from the original light itself. The reflection of sunlight in the darkness is unable to drive out the darkness, but the sunlight outside the reflection can drive the darkness away completely. Further in the purport, he says, everyone is born in darkness, and they require factual light from the Lord to see him directly, just as the sun can be seen only by the direct light of the sun. No lamp or man-made torchlight, however powerful it may be, can help one see the sun. The sun reveals itself. Therefore, the action of different energies of the Lord, the personality of God, or the personality of Godhead, can be realized by the light manifested by the causeless mercy of the Lord. So, basically, you know, we have material existence, which is a place of darkness, and therefore, in that state of ignorance or darkness, one cannot perceive the transcendental reality. In fact, one cannot perceive anything you know, in the darkness. Sometimes within the dark, but when there's darkness or even little reflections of light, one may perceive things which are not actually there and become fearful. Right? So one is possible to perceive things under the influence of illusion. We can see things which are not there. We see illusory things that actually have no existence. But we cannot see reality. Sometimes there's a little reflection of light in the darkness, but it's not enough to actually perceive, you know, the reality. So, for instance, Prabhupada gives the example. So, we're trying to see the supreme form of the Lord while in the darkness of material existence, and the little reflection of light can be compared to the scientists, their level of knowledge and understanding. There is certainly a spirit soul there. That spirit soul is, in essence, a reflection, being a particle of the Supreme Lord's effulgent energy. So it can shed a little light, something, but not enough. But when the spirit soul is directly in connection with the Supreme Lord himself, who's compared to the sun, that effulgent light illuminates everything, including the sun, ourself, and like that. Right. So, some of the main points: neither darkness or reflection has an independent existence. The combination of the two under the control of the Lord tends to produce the drama of Prakriti. It's like a show, or, you know, it's like you look at a movie or something. You know, if you're watching television, you can't actually talk to the people on the, you know, so it's a drama. It has no real substance. whatever little reflection of reality is within material existence is enough to produce a glare that people become are attracted to that as that is the reality. It's enough to, you know, that you know, they will be attracted to that and not search for something beyond it. It's enough to bedazzle them. It's called reflective intellectual gymnastics as well. You know, so people are, you know, enamored by the sun and the moon and the luminaries, so that is reflection of the spiritual effulgence and also the intellectual gymnastics of the spirit souls who are within material existence. But none of these can actually help us to see the Supreme Lord in the same way that, you know, the limited light can, or any amount of light can never reveal the sun. The sun reveals itself by its own immensely powerful light. That's what it takes. So the Supreme Lord can reveal himself by his immensely powerful mercy. Any questions on that? All right, now, the last two verses. Brahma, verse 35. Please know that the universal elements enter into my cosmos, and at the same time they do not enter into the cosmos. Similarly, I myself also exist within everything created, and at the same time I am outside of everything. In that previous verse, just to just before we go on, there is another side that, as we said, Mahamaya is an expansion of Yogamaya, and therefore, you know, the original question is how your energies are working. Part of that question is actually how your spiritual energy is working as well. And the spiritual energy acts the spiritual energy can act in such a way as to reveal the Lord himself. All right, so when we give the example of the sun is a very, very powerful and the full manifestation of light and energy. That is what is required to reveal the sun. So the spiritual energy is like that. The spiritual energy of the Lord is powerful enough to reveal the Lord. It's effulgent enough, you know, it gives one knowledge. It removes the darkness, it removes the ignorance. So the spiritual energy reveals the Lord, and as we described before, that for the Lord's devotees, in order to enhance their devotional moods, he sometimes may cover his form, he may reveal one form and cover another. He performs so many different activities, just like when he appeared before Shrutadeva and Bahulasva. He manifests two forms, but to each of them he covered one of the forms. And so in this way they're thinking, the Lord come to my place. You know, two people invited, the Lord come to my place. The other person, the Lord cover one of his form. They both felt that exclusively the Lord is coming to see them. So according to the different pastimes, we see that, again, with Arjuna, the Lord showed the universal form, but he could not perceive his form as Krishna, even though Krishna was standing right there. Whereas Mother Yasoda, who's, you know, Premier Bhakti, was on a more intense level, that even seeing the potency and power of the Lord would not reduce her motherly love. Therefore, when she opened up Krishna's mouth, she saw the potency of the Lord, but she also saw Krishna and herself. So Krishna's form was not hidden. In this way, you know, the energy, the spiritual energy of the Lord also acts to cover or uncover the Lord's qualities, pastimes, what have you, always for the benefit of the devotee, whereas the material energy acts in such a way as to cover the forms of the Lord, or, you know, to gradually diminish that covering, but there is no spiritual purpose generally. The material energy is ultimately not acting for a particular spiritual purpose according to that relationship. So just understand that when it describes, you know, he is asking about the material and spiritual forms, and even if Brahma hasn't asked, the Lord has indicated that he will answer all his questions, even those he hasn't asked. In this statement here, verse 35, this is the Prayojana question. How does the Lord play with his different energies? As asked in verse 28. Please know that the universal elements enter into the cosmos and at the same time do not enter the cosmos. Similarly, I myself exist within everything created, and at the same time, I am outside of everything. So the big question is, how does this verse relate to Prayojana Prema Bhakti? In essence, for instance, just as the elements enter into all beings, but they remain separate. So in other words, you know, all the elements of material existence, no matter, despite all the different forms of what have you, you know, earth, water, fire, air and ether always remain, you know, the ingredients of the material world. And at the same time, they're producing all the different forms. Similarly, the Lord can remain separate. He enters into all beings. So he's within the heart of all beings. That is one thing. And when he performs his pastimes, then he appears not within, but with outside. So again, we see the example of Mother Yasoda, the Krishna show that he can be within. Mother Yasoda looked within his mouth. As you saw within, there is Krishna. And at the same time, Krishna was sitting on her lap. So, it relates both to his material energies and to his spiritual energies. Basically, he's describing how the Lord performs his pastimes in the material and spiritual worlds. The material world is the subject of the Maya, Mahamaya, and the spiritual world is the subject of the Yoga Maya, respectively. We know that Krishna enters into the universe, and at the same time, he always remains situated in his own abode. This is another way in which he... So he's within his abode, performing his pastimes, and at the same time he appears to be within the universe, either as a super soul or performing his different pastimes. So his pastimes, in one sense, in the material world, are without attachment. We see that Raghunath Das Goswami, although he used to reside in his home when his parents wanted him to get married, but he resided there without attachment. And, so, you know, Krishna also resides. For his devotees, he remains within their heart, but because he's very attached to them, he also appears, he manifests his form, his name, his qualities, his fragrance, his colour, his, you know, features like that. His sound of his voice, because he's very attached to his devotees. Now, how does that relate to Prayojana? Let us get to the mystery. Prabhupada says in his purport, "Herein lies the mystery of the transcendental knowledge. The mystery is transcendental love of God. And one who is charged with such transcendental love of Godhead can without difficulty see the personality of Godhead in every atom and every movable or immovable object, and at the same time he can see the personality of Godhead in his own abode. Goloka, enjoying eternal pastimes with his eternal associates. This vision is the real mystery of spiritual knowledge, as stated by the Lord in the beginning, you know, Sarahasyam Tarangam. Actually, the spiritually developed person is able to have the television of the kingdom of God always reflected within his heart. That is the mystery of the knowledge of the personality of Godhead.